5 o'clock hour of the Burns and Gambo show. I want to make one thing real perfectly clear about what we're about to talk about here, and not that anybody complained or sent me a tweet or anything like that. Nobody is reporting this. Nobody's got a source. Nobody is saying, you know, I got a guy in the industry who's telling me this. This is purely 100% wish list speculative writing that it gives you something to think about. It gives you something to talk about. But nobody is suggesting that this has happened or will happen or has been discussed. It's just one of those kind of speculative type stories. But there was a story on a Pittsburgh Steeler website today, very similar to some of the websites that Gambo and I often go to looking for kind of ideas for things to talk about with the Cardinals, sites like CardsWire.com or Revenge of the Birds or even like Bright Side of the Sun for the Phoenix Suns. And this one was a Steelers-based website. And they wrote a very interesting piece about why Larry Fitzgerald should be the Steelers' top free agent target.
Yes.
And they talk about, you know, the state of the wide receiver room in Pittsburgh,
how young they are, how immature they are
in some regards, given what Juju Smith-Schuster was doing, right?
And how he could return
home. There's some uncertainty
home.
There with that position. Yeah.
Yeah, return home to Pittsburgh and play there. Listen, it's not going to happen, right? I mean, Fitz has always said, I'm not going anywhere else. But it is interesting that there is an SB Nation story about, hey, you know, this is what the Steelers should do. The Steelers should go get Larry Fitzgerald. They should go get him. And hey, come back and play at Heinz Field. That's where he played when he was with the Panthers. He could end his career where it started. And, you know, he might actually receive more playing time than he would if he was playing in Arizona. And, you know, they make a case that despite his age and everything, he could really help and really help the organization. So it's not going to happen, right? I mean, we know that. We see it. But, you know, it's one of those things. I very rarely see anything like that because I think everybody kind of knows that Fitz is going to end his career with the Cardinals. So, you know, when I was looking at some Larry Fitzgerald stuff, yeah, why Larry Fitzgerald should be the Steelers' top free agent target. He would offer so much more to the Steelers' receivers than just his sure hands by a guy named Michael Beck. And I was like, okay, I'll read it. I'll read it a little bit. No, full well, it's not going to happen. But one of the things it made me think about was, you know, I mean, that would be the shocker of all shockers. Like, it would be, oh, what? Like, that would hurt. And it would be shocking. And I was just thinking, like, how have there ever been in this market with these teams, has there ever been a shocker like that? Has there ever been a, you know, because when Randy left and Schilling left and Gonzo left, okay, you know, kind of get it. We knew those guys were going to leave. When Paul Goldschmidt left, when Justin Upton left, okay, got it. Kind of knew those guys were going to leave. And you go through the teams and you start to figure it out. When Keith Kachuk left, we knew it. When Jeremy Roenick left, we knew it. You go through the teams, like, has there ever been, like, a big shocker where a guy left and it just blindsided you? Because that would blindside everybody. It's not going to happen, but it would be one of those blindside hits.
Yeah, it would be. You know, we talked about this earlier, and we took suggestions. Sarah came on. We were getting some tweets about it at Burns and Gambo, and you and I were talking about our own personal experience. And you know, a thought kind of occurred to me. We were getting so many suggestions from, but what about this guy and what about that guy? And it was really interesting to hear some of those ideas. And a thought occurred to me in that for guys like you and I, and not that we're different or special or anything like that, but in particular you, with all the stories that you break and all the information you get, I doubt you're very rarely shocked by anything, by something like this, because usually you get an inclination or a hint that something might happen, you talk to people, and you're in the know, right, when it comes to stuff like this. So I bet the threshold to shock John Gambadoro is a lot different than the threshold to shock Bill, who's listening right now in Tempe, or John right now, who's listening in Glendale, because for them, they're not talking to the general managers and the players and the coaches and the owners and the decision makers around all of these leagues. So for them, it's going to take a lot less to shock them than it is you or me or somebody who kind of does this for a living, because I'm very rarely shocked by guys getting moved or guys getting traded. Because a lot of times you just kind of expected. And you know what? Another thing, too, you and I have been doing this for so long, not to make us sound old, but, man, at this point, I kind of feel like we've seen it all. I don't know if there's much left that would shock me when it comes to something like that. Now, if Fitz were to go sign a one-year contract with the Pittsburgh Steelers and finish, yeah, that would shock the living hell out of me if that happens. That would shock
somebody
me.
Brought up, there's been, I had a guy just text me, Steve Nash. No, we knew, we were calling for Steve Nash to be traded. Like, we were calling for it. Like,
yeah, we
like
were, but again, our level of shock is different than maybe somebody who wasn't listening to us when we called for that, right? Or who wasn't tuning into us every single day. I mean, just because we weren't shocked by it doesn't mean people weren't shocked by it. You see what I'm saying?
Sure. Yeah. But when you go back and you think about it, it's like, okay, like we've been talking about trading Steve Nash and getting what you can for him for a while now. Like it is something, and the team was on the Amari was gone, the team was on the decline. So it wasn't like I think if you sit back and you think about, okay, it wasn't really that much of a shock. Where he went, the Lakers, okay, maybe. But
that shocked me. Yeah, that I told you earlier, I was very shocked by that.
Antonio McDyess was a name that came up. Like, that shocked a lot of people. Like, the Denver thing. Like, really? Like, that whole, the way that thing went down. Okay, so I like the Antonio McDyess one. That's pretty good. You liked Dan Marley when he got traded, how it just kind of like, yeah, it just like a clothesline, right? It just kind of, it came out of nowhere.
Cut you off right at the knees. And now look, I understand there are a lot of people who are listening to us right now, including you, my co-host of the last 10 years, who probably weren't in Phoenix the day Dan Marley got traded to the Cleveland Cavaliers in October of 1995. Okay, that was a long time ago. But I remember that day clear as a bell because he was so popular and he was so beloved and he was considered such a core part of that organization. And the day he got traded, it was just like you got punched in the gut. And I wasn't, I mean, just a fan back then. I was working in the Valley Media that summer, and so I was in Flagstaff covering training camp the day it happened, and I got the phone call, and I rushed down to the team hotel, and it was stunning. And that, to me, would be the only comp to news that Fitz would do something like this. And again, we're going to keep reiterating this. This is not going to happen. I will say this. If a story like this had surfaced 5 years ago about Fitz, I would have been very scared about it back then. 5 years ago, I would have sat up and taken something like this very seriously. Now, if he's playing, he's playing for the Arizona Cardinals. He's not going to play for anybody else. You, especially for a team in the Steelers, there's no guarantee of a Super Bowl for that team in that conference. I mean, I think that would be the only way he would do something like that. And even then, I still don't think he would do something like that.
No, I don't expect that. I mean, he's either going to come back for one more year and just continue to come back for one more year until he's 72 years old, or he's going to retire. I mean, it's never going to be a two-year deal. It's just, you know, 1 year and 1 year and 1 year and then – or just retire. I still think that he's going to retire. I mean, I think that. But nobody knows anything with Fitz, and I think he'll, you know, I think he really just, he may have an idea one way or another, but I think Fitz really like kind of uses this time to kind of see where he is. Where's his mind? Where's his body? Does he want to play? Does he not want to play? And the thing with Fitz too, and the reason why I do think that, he, you know, that there's a good chance, I really do think there's other things Fitz wants to do. And that's what you have to, if you're going to retire, there's got to be other things that you want to do. There's got to be other things that you love and you're passionate about. And, you know, he is, outside of traveling, because he loves to travel, you know, he's got a great business mind. And I can see him being part of an ownership group with a team at some level. I mean, I think he does want to get into that. So I can see that, you know, maybe 3 years ago, that wasn't the case. But I think now, I think he's more and more geared towards the business side of sports.
One prominent NBA voice thinks the Phoenix Suns could be the second best team in the Western Conference and really would be if they had just done one thing differently this offseason. We'll tell you what that one thing is next on the Burns and Gambo Show. Seven and four. Yeah, things haven't been great the two of the last three games. But Ryan Russillo, Bill Simmons, on Bill Simmons' podcast, looked at the Phoenix Suns, and, I mean, Simmons sounded convinced that he'd be more inclined to make them the number two team in the West over the Clippers against the LA Lakers. But both Russillo and Simmons agreed, Gambo, that had, on the night of the draft, the Phoenix Suns taken Tyrese Haliburton instead of Jalen Smith. Well, I'll let Ryan Russillo say it.
What was the bummer for me?
Because they took Jalen Smith and not Haliburton. It'd be perfect. Because he can play with everybody. Like, Halliburton's been so impressive with Sacramento that, like, I made a joke about, oh, now that, you know, is Fox the guy? He can play with everybody. So you don't have to get rid of anyone around him. That's the great thing about him in college. His freshman year, he played with these higher volume scorers. And then when he took over, he's like, no, I can do all the stuff, guys. Don't worry about it. So he'd be perfect for them.
Before you comment on Haliburton, can I ask you a personal question? Have you ever wished you could just do a podcast so you could drop the F-bomb whenever you wanted to and there'd be no repercussions? Have you ever considered that, Gambo? Because
that's what my boy Brock Huer does. Brock does a podcast now.
Uh-huh.
You know, yeah. I mean, maybe when I retire, I'll do one. I'll do like one or two podcasts a week.
Because it's very obvious in the podcast.
You want to do it with me?
I listen to a few podcasts and it's pretty obvious you can sling those bad boys around if you want. So I I'll do one with you. Absolutely. Why not? Something tells me Brock's not slinging around F-bombs like that on his podcast. Just a guess. I don't think that's Brock's jam, but yeah, it's you should consider that when this radio thing is done, Gambo, cuz there's no dump button on a podcast, right? You can say what you want, apparently.
Yeah, I don't know. I've never done a podcast before, so we'll see. I don't know. Maybe when I decide to retire, I might be open to that. That sounds interesting.
All right, sounds good. Haliburton, a name Haliburton. That we talked a lot about going yes. into the draft, and a guy that you mentioned, Vinny Murata, earlier. Yeah, Vinny was very
loved him.
Loved him. And was, I think, a little bothered that you were reporting the Suns didn't love him, because I think he thought
alone.
He would.
He wasn't alone in that. There was, you know, I mean, you know how I work. You've worked with me for a long time. I eliminate a lot of guys. So when I came out with my, here's the guys that are not going to be drafted, and Haliburton was on that list, I got a lot of why? Like that, he'd be great. I mean, he's a 6'5 point guard. He's fantastic. He can play under Paul for 2 years and then develop and let him be the point guard. So there's a lot of people that liked Haliburton. Vinny, I don't know anybody like him more than Vinny. And I remember when we were doing the Suns draft preview that day, and I'm like, okay, here's the seven guys. The Suns are going to draft one of these guys. And, of course, I had Jalen Smith on my list of seven, and nobody else tied Jalen Smith to the Suns. I didn't know exactly who they were going to take. I mean, I really didn't. But I narrowed it down to seven, and I said, it's going to be one of these guys. And sometimes that's the best we can do, and I take it. Because sometimes I can't tell you this is the guy they're going to take because of where they're picking and because things change. But we did say they're going to take one of the seven guys. And when Haliburton won, it wasn't one of those guys. I mean, every question I got from Vinny on draft day was, well, why not Haliburton? Like, it doesn't make any sense. Like, why not? He loved him. Other people did, too. I think the Suns looked at him a little bit differently, more of a combo guard, probably not dynamic enough to be, you know, a one or a two. He's off to a good start. He's getting a lot of minutes, man. He's getting a lot of minutes. He's playing about 30 minutes a game, I think, you know, 28, 29, 30 minutes a game. And he has had some very good games. So he's definitely a player that Sacramento liked, and they drafted him, and they seem to be very happy with him so far.
Tyrese Haliburton is averaging 12.5 points per game. He is playing a whopping 29 minutes per night. He's averaging 5.5, 6 assists per game. Look at his shooting numbers. He is shooting 54% from the floor. He's shooting 52% from the three-point line. Good boy, he is off to a tremendous start so far. Well, we have found some of the people who loved Haliburton even more than Vince Murata. Ryan Russillo was one. Bill Simmons, same podcast, the other. And he said, look, if the Suns took Haliburton, he thinks they would be no doubt the second-best team in the West.
I actually think if they had taken them, I would say comfortably they would be
undefeated
for the Western Finals. No, I would say they're going to be the second best team. I would feel really good about saying that, because you nailed it. This is why the advanced metrics people liked him so much. He didn't need to have the ball to have a real effect on games on both ends. The team's defense is always better when he's out there. The offensive efficiency, whether he has the ball or not, he just knows how to play with other guys. He's like that dude in pickup that you just want to be like, oh, I want to be on that guy's team. It'll be fun to play with that dude. How he's meshed with Fox without Fox getting threatened at all.
Now, look, we'll see how it all turns out when it, and maybe the Suns will have made a mistake when it's all said and done with last year's draft. But I do think James Jones has earned himself a little bit of the benefit of the doubt when it comes to the draft, because even these guys, even Russillo and Simmons in the same podcast, acknowledged, hey, look, we all laughed at Cam Johnson a couple of years ago, and he's great. He's turned out far better than any of us could have anticipated, and everybody laughed at the Suns when they took Cam Johnson. So, you know, give the Suns a little bit of wiggle room on this one and some time to see what Jalen Smith develops to, because I think Cam Johnson has sort of earned them that right, earned James Jones that right to be given a little bit of wiggle room when it comes to the Halliburton thing. Look, but it is interesting commentary for sure.
Look, he could end up being, you know, he's a Rookie of the Year candidate for sure. I mean, he is a Rookie of the Year candidate. And, you know, if he's going to play this many minutes, then you're talking about comparing him against Wiseman from Golden State and LaMelo from Charlotte and then, you know, Anthony Edwards. Those are the guys that will be in the mix for Rookie of the Years. Edwards, LaMelo, Wiseman, and Halliburton. So he's in that mix, I mean, to get consideration for Rookie of the Year because of the minutes. I mean, he's playing a lot of minutes, and he's playing well.
The bigger picture point of Simmons and Russillo talking about the Suns, and I think this is very important to bring up, and you said it very well earlier in the show. Look, the last exposure we had to the Phoenix Suns was Monday night against the Wizards, and it left us very disappointed. We haven't had a chance to get that collective taste out of our mouths yet because they haven't played, and they won't play again. At the earliest, it will be Monday against Memphis because of the postponement of tomorrow's game against the Warriors and Saturday's game against the Pacers. But Simmons and Russillo took a much bigger picture view of the Suns, and in the middle of all of this arguing about Ayton and what they should do and what they need to do to fix him and is he actually even broken, and in the middle of all of this, Russillo and Simmons took a real 30,000 feet view of the Phoenix Suns, and both of them concluded that at 7-4, when Chris Paul really hasn't played that well, when Devin Booker hasn't played as well as he can, when Ayton has been struggling offensively the way he has, they both still believe that the Phoenix Suns might be better equipped than the Clippers to meet the Lakers in the Western Conference Finals when it's all said and done. They were both very bullish on the Suns in the podcast.
You know, the last thing we have in our minds, the last taste we have in our mouth is the Suns getting blown out by Washington. The game was over by halftime, and it was very disappointing, and they had lost 2 out of 3. They lost to the Pistons. So I wish they would have had another game. But I think when you look at it, you look at the West and you compare all these teams and you look at the Suns and you say, okay, let's see what the Suns did that's good. Well, they beat Utah. That was a great win. They beat Denver. They beat Dallas. They beat New Orleans. They had some hiccups, okay, but young teams, you know, that haven't really learned how to win, they have those type of hiccups. So I think that's probably why they're looking at it. And I think it is as much about not having a belief in any other team in the West as much as it is about the belief they have in the Suns.
You think so?
I do. I you know, we're all gung-ho on how tough the West is, and, you know, so far it hasn't lived up to the hype, in my opinion.
No, it hasn't. You're right. It hasn't. And I think the Suns, they're 7-4. They haven't come anywhere near hitting their heads on the ceiling as to how good they can get. They're nowhere close to their potential so far with how they've played, which is, to me, the good news when it's all said and done. Now, the bad news is what we're going to talk about next. And sorry to foreshadow it like that, but we got to do it. Suns game on Saturday against the Pacers, the latest Suns game to be postponed. That's now 3 total. When are they going to find their way back to the floor? That's coming up next on the Burns and Gambo Show. Just real quick before we talk about the Suns, Gambo, Bear, our producer, just mentioned in my headsets, he may have said the same thing to you, I don't know. Taylor Hall just scored his first goal as a member of the Buffalo Sabres in their first game.
He did, huh?
Because of course he did. You know, because of course.
Because he can.
Yes, of course.
It's not a
winning
Taylor
player. Hall
had disappointment with the Yotes.
Oh, it's huge. Massive.
Yeah.
Massive disappointment.
Not a good team
Yotes.
Player.
Huge.
More of an individual guy.
The Yotes will open their season tonight against the San Jose Sharks, 7 o'clock, Fox Sports Arizona. That is what's on tonight. We'll mention that again when we talk about all the games that are on tonight. But, of course, the news of the day comes to us from the Phoenix Suns, and Gambo was the first to report, as Sarah mentioned a moment ago, that the Suns now have had a third game postponed strictly due to contact tracing at this point. They had their game against Atlanta last night postponed, their game Friday against the Warriors postponed. We knew about those two yesterday. And then today, right after we got off the air, it was discovered by Gambo and reported by the league that their Saturday game against the Indiana Pacers has also been postponed. And as Gambo reported just about an hour ago or so, as of today, there are still no positive coronavirus tests on the Suns, which means this is strictly a contact tracing issue that is keeping them from being on the floor.
Yeah, there is. They tested Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. There's been no positive tests on any of those days. Now we'll see what happens tomorrow, Friday, and then they'll test again Saturday, and they'll test again Sunday, and then, you know, if everything goes okay, they'll be able to play Monday. But they do not have positive. And a lot of people are asking me, you know, with a positive test, like, why are they not playing? They're not playing because of contact tracing. They're not playing because, you know, this virus has an incubation period. You know, you can have the virus and then be around somebody. Oh, I was around that person, and I was around them for a long time, and I was sitting right next to them for 2 hours, and then the next day that person tested and they're negative, and then they test the day after, they're negative, and then a third day later they tested and they're negative. It might be the fourth day, the fifth day, the sixth day that they test and they're positive. So, you know, that's the tough thing about this virus, is that it's not, you know, you don't know. I mean, you could have a Suns player test negative 3 days in a row, and then on the fourth day they test positive, and it goes back to that Washington game. So it is a very difficult thing in the NBA. That's why they have what's called the contact tracing rules.
And that's the key, what you just said a second ago. It goes back to that Washington game, because as we have learned now for Washington, it was two players who had tested positive. Now it's three players who have tested positive. So clearly there are guys in that organization that the Suns played against on Monday who have it, not through contact tracing. They have it, okay? They have COVID-19. They've tested positive. So here is, in effect, what the league has done to the Suns. Knowing that the Suns were around guys who definitely have had it, the league has bought themselves basically a whole week to find out whether or not anybody on the Suns got it from anybody on the Wizards by postponing the Atlanta game, the Golden State game, and now the Indiana game. The next game for the Suns on the schedule is Monday afternoon, nationally televised affair against the Memphis Grizzlies, which will be exactly 1 week to the day after the Suns last played a game. So the league is saying, okay, after 7 days, if nobody on the Suns has it, we've got to presume they're clean, they're clear, and they can play. And they want to give themselves as much time as they possibly can to make sure nobody on the Suns has it or got it from anybody on the Wizards. And by postponing the Pacers game, they've basically given themselves a week to do just that.
Which, yeah, we discussed this earlier. If they were smart and they would have, you know, a little foresight and thought ahead, they just wouldn't have had the Suns play the Wizards.
Right.
And then that would have been it. It would have been one game instead of three games. Don't play the Wizards, and we'll be fine. I mean, you had to think at some point with a couple of Washington players down that this could, and it came back to bite them. I think they didn't, you know, they didn't think about it. And I think they may have made a mistake, to be honest with you, too, because we knew going into that Wizards game that they had a couple of players that were in protocol, correct?
We didn't know that they were. What we knew was that Bradley Beal had been held out but was being allowed to play against the Suns. Okay, so just Bradley Beal, you know, and we don't know whether he's one of the guys who has it or not on the Wizards, but we certainly know that he was a guy who had to miss a game last weekend because he might have had it. So we didn't know about Hachimura, and we didn't know about Wagner, but we knew about Beal, and Beal was allowed to play. Here's something else the league knew about the Wizards before that Monday game. They knew that when the Wizards played the Heat since have had eight players who were listed out due to health and safety protocols. When the Wizards played the Celtics, seven players out due to health and safety protocols. The Sixers, six players out due to health and safety protocols. I know it's easy to say this in hindsight now, but where the league clearly messed this up, and I'm sure why they're being so cautious with the Suns now, because they don't want to repeat the mistake again. Where the league messed this up was clearly, it looks like anyway, I suppose this could all be a coincidence, but it seems unlikely. It looks like the Wizards have been somewhat of a spreader of all of this because the teams they are playing are having issues with COVID-19. And knowing that, or at least having a better idea of that, it would have been really helpful had they just not played the Phoenix Suns on Monday, so it just impacts one team and not two.
Yeah, January 6th at Philadelphia, they played the Sixers. A day later, the Sixers played the Nets, where Philadelphia guard Seth Curry tested positive, okay? January 8th, they played the Celtics. The Wizards played Boston that last Friday. After the game, Beal chatted with Jason Tatum, neither of whom were wearing face masks or social distancing. The following day, Tatum tested positive. 2 days later, after Robert Williams tested positive. January 9th versus the Heat. The Wizards played the Heat the following day. They played without Bradley Beal, who was listed as close contact to Tatum for the game, and he was placed under coronavirus protocols. Numerous players, including Butler, Adebayo, Bradley, and Dragic, were under coronavirus protocols before the January 12th game against the Sixers, and then January 11th against the Suns. That practice that Tuesday was canceled because two Wizards players had to enter coronavirus protocols. Right. So, you know, and then after the game, they announced that the Jazz game would be postponed. So it does go back to this trail of games with the Wizards. The Sixers game on January 6th, the Celtics on the 8th, the Heat on the 9th, and then the Suns on the 11th. So, if you know, super spreader or not, it's just a lot of things tie back to the Wizards.
Yep, and not that this has anything to do with anything. In fact, I really don't think it has much to do with it at all, but it is an interesting coincidence in all that, and that's this, that if indeed Monday is the next time the Suns are back on the floor, because that will have given them that full week to see if anybody tests positive, it's interesting to me that the next three Suns games are all nationally televised affairs. And not that that's I know that sounds like I'm suggesting or insinuating that that could be driving this, and not necessarily so. It's just it's an interesting coincidence that the next time the Suns are supposed to play, they're on TNT on MLK Day in the middle of the afternoon in kind of a showcase game.
I think it just clears the 5 days.
What now?
I think it clears the 5 days. That's the first
game
that clears the 5 days.
But it's just interesting that it's all happening. It's almost like, okay, these are three big games for the Suns coming up because they're three nationally televised windows. It's a coincidence, but I look at the schedule and it just kind of stands out. TNT, ESPN, ESPN, their next three games are three nationally televised affairs, and I don't think that has much to do with it, but it is interesting to look at the schedule and see that the Suns have some national prominence coming up, and it would be important to the league to make sure they're available to be able to play those games. When we come back, the Nets shook everything up yesterday, acquiring James Harden. Was there an ulterior motive in making that move? We'll talk about it coming up on the Burns and Gambo Show.
If it does, it's going to be a fun fascination. I mean, KD went from the Splash Brothers to the Dribble Brothers. It's going to be fun watching them play.
Dribble, 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 dribble.
Spurs and Rockets coming up from San
Antonio. It combined.
That was inside the NBA moments ago.
Dribble, dribble.
Charles Barkley, Kevin Durant went from the Splash Brothers to the Dribble Brothers.
Scoop, there it is.
It's my favorite commercial right now.
That's great. God, that's so funny. That's so funny. That show is the best. It remains the best. It will always be the best as long as those four guys are on it. Yeah, the Splash Brothers to the Dribble Brothers. Congratulations to Kevin Durant as the trade that shook the NBA yesterday, and they are still talking about it today. James Harden to the Brooklyn Nets, Oladipo to the Rockets, Caris LeVert to the Pacers. I don't feel like anyone's talking about LeVert to the Pacers as much as they should be. That's a pretty nice acquisition for the Pacers.
We would have seen that Saturday.
We would have.
Is that the Pacers game?
Yeah. We would have seen that Saturday.
And that was a good win for the Suns. That Pacer win was a good win. Sabonis had a big game, and they would have been facing a different Pacers team. A Pacers team that doesn't have Oladipo, but would have had Caris LeVert. That would have been Saturday's game here in Phoenix. That is now postponed.
Yeah. Yeah, he would have made a very nice, a formidable duo between between him and Malcolm Brogdon and Sabonis, and then T.J. Warren when they get him back. That's a nice little team they have there in Indiana with the Caris LeVert acquisition.
Yeah, if you're one of those power teams in the East, you may not want to play them in the playoffs. They'll be a hard out. Like you know yeah. They're going to make you work. It might be a long series when you play Indiana. I don't know that Indiana can get out of the East. Maybe they can. But I know this, if you're a Boston or you're a Milwaukee, they could be a really difficult out if you have to play Indiana.
And of course nobody cares about the Indiana Pacers, at least big picture in this deal. I'm mentioning them because I liked what they did. Obviously the big takeaways are twofold. Number one, it's the giant haul that the Rockets were able to get for James Harden, all of those draft picks, everything unprotected, Victor Oladipo, who's an unrestricted free agent at the end of the season. And then of course from the Nets perspective, exactly what Charles just said a second ago. Kevin Durant just went from the Splash Brothers in Golden State to the Dribble Brothers in Brooklyn. And the question that we're going to take the rest of the season to figure out, assuming Kyrie even comes back to the Nets, can that three-headed monster work? Something else Chuck said on Inside the NBA, and I don't have the audio here, but he said, quote, only one of those three guys has proven to me he's not selfish and not a me guy, and that's Kevin Durant. The other two guys are, and that's going to make it very problematic with that team to figure out how it's all going to work and keep everybody happy.
I told you there was a story on Nesson today about Kyrie Irving, and it basically saying like he could sit, you know, maybe he might possibly sit out the season. Now, who knows what's going to happen with Kyrie? But Nesson had a story today, Kyrie Irving reportedly willing to sit out the season. That's what they're saying. Irving's prepared to sit out the remainder of the campaign amid his growing frustration with the Nets. KRON-TV's Jason Dumas reported Wednesday. The star point guard who has missed Brooklyn's last five games reportedly is irate with the organization for multiple reasons, including the hiring of head coach Steve Nash. It says there are also reports indicating Brooklyn's acquisition of James Harden was not approved by Irving, who reportedly was not answering the Nets' calls. So, yeah, there's a report that he could sit out the remainder of the season. Jason Dumas, he's got a verified Twitter account and everything. So, yeah, Kyrie willing, I'm on his Twitter account right now, Kyrie willing to sit out the year if need be, those close to him are saying.
Adrian Wojnarowski was talking about this earlier, and he said, look, part of the reason why the Nets – made this trade is they know that Durant and Harden get along, and they want to make sure a couple years from now when Durant's a free agent that they keep him as a free agent, and Harden is better bait to keep KD around than Kyrie is.
It gives the Nets leverage on Kyrie Irving and in his future in Brooklyn, because now because ultimately what this is about for the Nets is the future of Kevin Durant, and free agency comes up quickly again. You know, at the end of next season, all three of these players could be free agents. But most importantly for the Nets, Kevin Durant. And they've got to know that they're going to be able to be in position to re-sign him and have at least one significant running mate moving forward with him. And James Harden allows them to have that. These two players really hatched the idea of getting Harden to the Nets in the offseason when they were working out in L.A.
But per your Nesson report, and I guess some of this is kind of based in that too, at this point, nobody knows what they can count on from Kyrie Irving from here on out. I mean, who the hell knows when he's going to be back, how well he's going to play when he does get back?
Some people are happy when they're miserable. He seems to be a guy. He was in Cleveland with LeBron, wasn't happy. Goes to the Celtics, they're going to build the whole team around him, he's not happy. Goes to the Nets, now he's not happy. You know, again, I mean, some people just, you know, they are happy when they're miserable. And Kyrie Irving seems to be one of those people that is happiest when he's miserable. Like, if things are going well, then he can't be happy. He can only be happy when he's miserable. So, that's – and there are people like that, man.
There are a lot of people like that.
My dad in some way was like that. So – there are some people that just are only happy in misery, and Kyrie Irving seems to be that guy.
Yeah. So how this becomes officially the most interesting eyeball-worthy experiment in all the NBA. How it's going to work, I have no idea. How it's going to work with a first-time coach, I have no idea. But I cannot wait to start watching to see how it does. Speaking of watching, it's time for the Coors Light What's On Tonight, brought to you by our friends at Coors Light. What we'll be watching tonight is the opener for the Arizona Coyotes hosting the San Jose Sharks at 7 o'clock from Gila River Arena. Coming off their first playoff appearance in 8 years, the Coyotes and the Sharks at 7 o'clock tonight on Fox Sports Arizona. That is what we'll be watching tonight.
And we'll have Lawson Crouse in the lineup. He'll be on that fourth line. The top line will be Hayden Schmaltz and Garland. Second line, Keller, Brassard, and Pitlick. Third line, Kessel, Dvorak, and Kajula. And then Larson, Fisher, and Krause on that fourth line. That'll be your lineups tonight as the Yotes take on San Jose.
Yeah, so we'll see what they've got tonight. We'll be ready to talk about it tomorrow. Preview the NFL playoffs as well. We will see you at 2 o'clock here on the Burns and Gambo Show.
Have a good night, everyone.